You're listening to Bit by Bit, July 22nd, 2005. Hello and welcome. My name is Bob Sprankle and this is Bit by Bit, a podcast by a teacher for teachers talking and reflecting about the use of technology in instruction and the changing classroom environment in the 21st century. Well, the heat wave here in Maine has gotten a little bit better, but it's kind of humid out today, so I'm going to keep the window open. You'll probably hear some background noise running through. And also, my daughter has a friend over, so you might hear them playing. But hey, this is podcasting. Oh, boy. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. Papakosh. Oh, very exciting, because I actually finally got around to making a pop screen, which is definitely catching my peas a lot better, and hopefully you'll notice a difference there. I'm going to put a link on the website on how to make your own pop screen. It's a pretty simple recipe, and I did an okay job. I spent, about an hour in Home Depot getting the materials that I needed, and definitely saved some money on a pop screen. Been meaning to do this for a while, so I can already hear the difference, and I'm real happy with it. Today's show is a bit reflective. I believe this is going to be a three-part little episode here, which I'm going to kind of talk about what I actually do in my classroom with blogging and with podcasting. There's been so much interest in what Room 208 kids have been doing. I just can't believe the response that they've gotten. It's just incredible. In fact, I am pretty sure that that we will be part of an article in the New York Times on August 3rd. Some reporters got in touch with me, and I believe that was instigated by David Werlick while he was down in NEC. That's my suspicion, at least, because he did give me a warning that they'd be getting in touch. So that's really exciting, and hopefully that will happen in August 3rd. I'll check that out. Also, I've recently been asked to submit a proposal to the Krista McAuliffe Technology Conference that happens every year in Nashua, New Hampshire. Very excited about that. I hope that goes through. I had the privilege to go there once before, and it's just an outstanding conference. And they asked if I would submit a proposal for an hour workshop to talk about podcasting in my classroom. So as I get my thoughts ready for that, I thought I would actually turn some of that into some bit-by-bit podcasts. So in my proposal, I wrote the following for a session description, if that in fact happens. And I said that I would share the journey of how I started my podcasting in my 3-4 elementary classroom, as well as how we manage a weekly show. Participants will hear clips from my classroom's podcast, as well as testimony from students on the value of creating a podcast. I will discuss its effect on my own instruction, the motivation of the students, and the incredible instructional benefits for reading, writing, and research skills. The target audience for my session is K-12 teachers. Participants will leave with a better understanding of how to start a classroom podcast and the instructional benefits of having a podcast. So I started reflecting and kind of putting down some notes today about how we started with this, where it all began. And I believe, as I said, this will be a three-part response to that reflection. And today we'll call it the birth of blog. We'll talk about how the blog really got us going direction of a podcast. And the part two shows I'm going to call Writers at Work. And I actually recorded a little bit of my students working before school got out. And you'll actually hear some of the discussions that they're having and how authentic mini lessons on writing can take place while writing the script for the podcast. And then part three, I kind of slapped the title on that I put on for my proposal, or at least part of it, Podcasting with Purpose. And I'll try to talk about how it's motivated kids and how it's really changed our classroom and completely changed my instruction. So I went down to the pool today with my wife and daughter, and I jumped in and then jumped out and made about 4 pages of notes, and I'm going to try to get through some of these for today. So we might go a little bit over the 10 minutes here. Now, some of what I'm talking about, I talked about in an interview with David Warlick, but I thought I'd go into it a little bit more. And as a teacher, I've been teaching 8 years, and I've had a web page each year. And it's been fantastic. And my main purpose of having a web page was to communicate to parents and also to host student work. And the primary purpose of that was to motivate kids to write by having a worldwide audience. And the webpage has served me well. However, maintaining a webpage is pretty cumbersome. I would usually update about once a week with my newsletter, and that actually took a long time just to even open up the Adobe Go Live software that I used. And when I did publish the students' work, I usually waited for every student to finish a certain project and do it all at once, because it would just take a bit of time to lay it all out. Early this year, I signed up for teacherweb.com, which is an excellent site. It's very inexpensive. I think it's $20 or maybe $25 a year. A great beginner type blog website that you can post news, homework, links, photos, all kinds of things. And so I started using that with my students to write a weekly news update from them. Now, the way that I started it was absolutely the wrong way to do it. And that is that I would sit down at our circle area. The kids would be on the floor, and we'd be looking up at the TV screen, which is where I projected my computer. I'd have the laptop on my lap. And I would ask them to start brainstorming things that they wanted to report out on for their newsletter. Well, this did not work at all, because in that large group setting, certain kids would come forward and do a lot of work, and other kids were hanging back and not working. So after about the second or third time of that, I scratched that, broke them up into groups of 4 or 5, and had them go out and pick their own topics still. That was, from the beginning, that was essential, that the kids had to pick what they wanted to report out on. So I broke them up into these small groups, and initially I gave them 10 minutes to write their little part of a bigger piece. And we kept it small at the beginning, and they did this. And of course, I went around, and anybody who was sort of hanging back, I would encourage their participation. And at times, I even motivated them by saying, "If you don't want to write with this group, then you can go off and write your own." And that snapped them right into it. So we had basic principles that we set out right away, and that was, as I said, kids decide what the topics are. I would pick random leaders to host the group, to manage the group. They would pick the topic, and then randomly we'd put people into those groups. They would take suggestions from others in picking the topics, listen to others, and then decide what topic they wanted to write about from stuff that we had done that week. And I also gave them a form to write on, and with that, they would list the team members' names, topic, title, and then at that point, it was a responsibility that everybody participated, that everybody wrote these pieces. So we started small with these groups, working on small paragraphs, and if you look back at our blog, you'll see that they were pretty short paragraphs at the beginning. And with that, we would work on one skill or two at a time when they then read them back to me. For instance, like organizing the sentences within the paragraph. They would write for 10 minutes, and then we'd hear each group read their passage and talk about what it needed. And right then and there, I would do authentic mini lessons on writing based on the needs of the work that they had just completed. Initially, they would hand me the finished work, and I would take them off and write the transitions between the paragraphs as I put them on the blog. And even at that time, I was deciding which paragraphs went first, second, third, fourth. Now, as we write these, and these are a lot longer, they're responsible for their transitions. So we will, as a group, decide which topic should go first, second, third, fourth, and even why that order makes sense. And then they will write their own transitions from the previous paragraph as they hear it. So, for instance, we have a topic, let's say it's about Colors Day, one of the things we do at school. So that group will read, if they get picked first, that group will read that paragraph. And then the next group, after they've heard the paragraph and we've approved it, they will write the transition to that paragraph even before they read it to us. And what's so awesome is this is an unspoken thing at this point. Group A finishes. We applaud. That's how we know that we've hit the mark, is when everybody applauds after all the mini lessons and correcting that we need to do. And then the second group, we will say, okay, next group. And, you know, one person always picks up the pen. Everybody has done this and just starts writing the transition from the previous paragraph. And we've talked about what makes good transitions. Okay, so we started out with 10 minutes early on in the year. The process now takes an hour and sometimes more for them to write. Their pieces are a lot bigger, much more sophisticated. And now we go into a lot more depth with all the skills that we are working on with the writing. Again, after the students read their piece, that's when we go into these relevant and authentic mini lessons based on the writing that just happened. And what we have is I'll usually ask a question, or somebody else will say, that's not right, we need to fix that. And just with questions that I'll ask, the kids themselves are fixing what's wrong with the piece. So what's happening is that the kids are teaching each other how to fix things. And, you know, I'll direct with questions mostly and rarely have to actually get in there and suggest the changes. The kids are doing these all alone. Also, with these pieces that they're writing each week, we're using these for daily oral language lessons later on overheads. I'll talk more about this in the next episode, and you'll actually hear the kids working on these pieces. You'll hear a couple exciting things that I'll put in where they're actually talking about the organization of the paragraphs and even what type of language they should use in the piece, where we get into trying to identify what is our audience here, and perhaps that would help us answer that question. So again, remember, this is the blog that I'm talking about. We turn the blog into a podcast eventually, but we still post the blog. So the script of the weekly update that goes on the podcast is still posted as a blog. And if I had to make a choice between a podcast and a blog for my students, I would never give up the blog. And I'll talk about why in a moment. I moved away from the teachersweb.com site to using a piece of software for the Macintosh called iBlog, which is a real easy piece of software. And the reason that I did that was because now, with having an actual blog, I could give every student their own section to put their work. So right away, this really motivated my writers. We were doing poetry at that time, so they just were banging out the poems, and they would finish a poem, bring it to me, and I would immediately get it up on the website. And I did that intentionally. They'd give me a poem, I'd type it up, 2 minutes later it was on the website, published to the whole world, and they got completely hooked by this. And then I let them do that a little bit, and then I said, okay, let's slow down here now. Let's go back and what can you do with this? And, you know, I asked some questions to have them go deeper, but they wanted their stuff up there. They really enjoy that. Also, I let them do a lot of drawing during recess, and we have a cartooning lunch on Monday, and they were putting a lot of that up. So a lot of people have asked me, well, what's the difference between a blog and a website? Well, using any type of blogging tool, the updating of it is just effortless. It's so quick. Using the iBlog software, I can take, like I said, I can take a piece, type it up, and it's up there. Definitely having that done so quickly and having those different categories for each student really has motivated my class. And I've come to see the blog as a living portfolio. My students have had portfolios since I've started teaching. And I'm really rethinking about how we do this. A lot of times we're taking our work, putting it into a folder, and then reflecting on it certain day, every day six, we reflect on our work as much as we can. But, you know, I'm really seeing that that's too late. I mean, they've moved on. The piece is finished. Whereas with a blog, they can get their work up there and reflect on it instantaneously. And I'm seeing this as a better tool for more timely reflection of their work. The biggest benefit of having a website, and in particular now a blog, is that it really can be a window to the classroom, which I think is essential, you know, in this very busy world that we live in, where most parents, both parents are working, and you know, time is short. I know that even with my own child, of how little time I've had to go into her classroom, to have a window right into that classroom to see what my student is working on is just invaluable. And so with a blog, because I can update things so quickly, I can literally post things that happen during the day that are up on the blog by the time the students get off the bus to share with their parents. And that's actually happened. We had a cartoonist come to the classroom. I took photos. I wrote a little something. When my students were at Specialist, posted the photos and the blog entry, and by the time they had gotten home, they could go and share those photos with their parents. Hey, we had a cartoonist come today. Let's go on the internet and look at the things that he showed us. There were pictures of the things that he showed the students, what he did. They could show it right then that day when they were all excited about it. So I really see a blog as essential for a classroom. And more, I believe that one of the jobs that the student has, especially in this day and age with limited time for parents, is to report back to the parents what is happening in their school day. You're getting two birds with one stone there. Students need to be reading, writing, and research, and now they can be using some of the time to work on those skills to actually report back to their parents about what they're doing. My role for the blog has been students will write, and then I'll type it up. So when we do our weekly news each week, they hand it to me at the end, and then we finish our other work. When they go to Specialists, I quickly type it up. It doesn't take that long. It's about a two-page thing to type. I post it, and their news is ready each week. I do a weekly newsletter, and now they are also contributing to their families to talk about what we are doing in the classroom. The writing for the weekly news is some of the best writing I've ever seen in the classroom. Teams of four or five students are building a successful piece of writing with the help of each other. They're going over the writing, editing it, revising it, talking about lessons that we've had, bringing in things to change, and I'm monitoring this, asking questions, but they're really doing the teaching to each other. And individuals that may not be able to bring a piece to this success independently are starting to be able to do that. These skills are coming into their writing, and I see it as if there were four people that sat down every week to build something like a car, let's say, if you were on an assembly line, and there were four of you building this thing, and your job was to do such and such, let's say the steering wheel. Well, after a while, you're going to learn how to put on wheels because the person next to you is putting on wheels. And that's what's happening with the writing of these pieces. You might be strong in one area of writing, but watching somebody else in your group who's stronger in another area is starting to influence your writing and your learning from that person. Another great thing is this is authentic mini lessons for writing. We listen to the pieces when the group is done, and we take issues right there with the writing and stop and talk about what we need to do rather than having the lessons in isolation. Also with the blog, this is writing that has purpose. As I mentioned above, its purpose is to communicate with the parents and also a bigger audience, the World Wide Web. The students have worked very hard because this is purposeful writing. And as you'll see in the third part of this, they even put in more effort when it became a performance piece as a podcast, knowing that people were going to hear this and they need to get it really polished to go and record it. The effort has increased even more. Well, I see that I'm way over my 10 minutes, and I hope that I gave a bit of an overview of why we do a blog and how my students actually write the blog. And as I said, the next episode, you'll hear them working on it. I'll play some of the audio that they're doing and that I recorded in the spring with them and make some commentary over it so that you can hear what's happening in the classroom. Okay, I'd love to hear your feedback and questions. You can go to the website, bobsprankle.com/bitbybit, or just go to bobsprankle.com. You'll see a link for Bit by Bit, And you can leave comments or email me at bitbybitpodcast@gmail.com. If you'd rather send audio comments, you can do that as well, and I can play them right on the podcast. Thanks a lot, and I'll try to get another episode up soon.